Well, hello, beautiful people. Welcome to Going Rogue. My name is Caitlin Johnston.
I'm Tim Foley.
And this week it has been Iran, 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 Iran. Just Iran all over the place. There was an attack on a Saudi oil refinery over the weekend, and the war hawks in the US government have been so excited by this idea that it may have been performed by the Iranians or in some sort of proxy capacity, which means that this could be the trigger for war that they have been looking for decades now. You know, they've had think tanks perseverating over this idea that how do we get to war with Iran? This question that they keep asking themselves. The weirdest collection of words for a normal human you could ever put together. How do we get to war with Iran? Well,
there are people whose job that is.
Oh, totally. That's yes. Their whole job. They get paid very well. Very well.
To start this war that would be many times worse than Iraq, necessarily.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. And that's, I think, also what is coming to a kind of head this week as well, where they're starting to understand what war with Iran may mean.
Because it was a really effective attack, right?
It was a very effective attack. It took out 5% of the world's oil capacity. World's oil
production
capacity, and bumped the price of oil went up 15%. So in terms of its economic effects, it was a disaster. It was a total disaster for the West and
for the rich.
It was a
major disaster for a lot of rich people. Their stocks took a big hit.
Yeah.
Because
if you think of oil as kind of like the bloodline of all production of rich people, then this was a massive hit for them. So
it's a really big difference.
And they're running around with their hair on fire like it was, because it was a massive tragedy for them.
Yeah, but like, we're supposed to want to go to war over that.
Right.
I don't give a fuck.
No one died. Not a soul died. Not an American soul, certainly, but not even a Saudi soul.
No, it hasn't stopped them from calling it their 9/11, though.
Yeah, which is hilarious.
You guys,
which shows you their priorities. Like, you know, right. Like if it's their 9/11, and it was purely economic, basically, like
a bunch of black slime from the ground is equivalent to thousands and thousands of human civilians.
Yeah, doesn't that show the psychology of some people? Like, you know, that they could be equivalent in your mind. You know, thousands of deaths and just the loss of some money. Like so yeah.
But I mean, it's also like we see it in Yemen. Like, Yemen is this horrible, horrible, deliberate man-made catastrophe, which has killed hundreds of thousands of human beings, hundreds of thousands of children. And you never hear about it. You just,
right.
The imperial media doesn't touch on it at all. It's just this invisible thing. And if they talk about it at all, it's just this, oh, it's this horrible tragedy. It's, you know, both sides. Who knows?
They make it sound like it's almost a natural disaster.
Right.
The way they talk about it is just like, oh, look, you know, war happens and stuff. And we don't know why. Like, oh, gosh. Yeah,
you see
those starving kids.
Right.
Okay,
you'll see a little skinny kid and they'll do that. Oh, the arms of the shtick. But it's totally Western caused and America driven, and yet we've heard so much more about some black slime
from the
ground getting bombed than we do about that.
Right.
Than we do about kids being murdered and this America facilitated Saudi led war upon Yemen.
Now, so because the Houthis in Yemen have claimed responsibility for this attack on the black sludge, and in retaliation for the fact that, you know, the Saudis are completely destroying their country in a humanitarian disaster, like, you know, it has been decades since we've seen something like this on this scale. Cholera. Like,
the worst cholera outbreak of all time,
yeah,
ever.
And something like 1 million children, you know, like in starvation.
At risk, yeah.
At risk.
And it's because the Saudis deliberately target their food and water infrastructure and cholera treatment plants.
Which is a war crime, obviously.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so the Houthis are saying, yes, this was us. They're claiming responsibility. We did, in fact, bomb your oil refinery. But now the US media particularly doesn't want to go there. Like, you know, there's several reasons why they don't want it to be the Houthis. And one of them is narrative control. Because if you start looking Yemen's way, you will start uncovering, like, a truly hideous face of what the U.S. military is doing in combination with the Saudis, or what the U.S. Military-industrial complex is doing by giving the Saudis arms that are being used in this horrific conflict.
Yeah, and it totally cripples the narrative they've got going on, because this, with the Trump administration especially, all we're ever hearing about is, oh, they arm the Houthis. Oh, they arm Hezbollah. How horrible that they give weapons to these militias. That's such a horrible thing. And yet they're funneling weapons into Saudi Arabia, which is just ISIS with an air force.
Right. Yeah.
Know, ISIS wearing a crown. It's much worse. It's a much worse thing to do if you look at Yemen. If you look at the things that they are doing to Yemen, let alone Saudi Arabia's subsidizing of terrorism around, which is actually a lot worse than anything Iran does. But the things Saudi Arabia does by itself, officially, like their overt actions, are much worse than anything Iran is accused of doing.
Right. So, I mean, we still don't know if it was the Houthis. We don't know if it was drones. We don't know if it was cruise missiles. We don't know if Iran was helping the Houthis, or if, in fact, it was the Iranians themselves, which is something that the US has been trying to push. There's very little evidence in any way about that. There's some pictures of satellite pictures of what occurred. What we do know is that it was an extremely effective attack, and it I think what we're seeing now is the US administration actually have to take a step back. I mean, of course, there are people like Lindsey Graham who just can't wait to nuke them. Like, you know, their whole life has been pointed towards this actually happening, and this is their moment. There's time to shine. But what might be happening is that the US has had a little bit of a wake-up call, because it was so effective and required very little in the way of technology.
Yeah, there were no planes involved.
No, it wasn't.
There was no Air Force involved.
Yeah, it's almost like the way that information has been democratized through the internet or whatever. Technology has kind of caught up with missiles and with the military, and you can cause a lot of harm, it turns out, with a few drones or a few, you know, old-fashioned cruise missiles.
Yeah, and just especially the way that the whole oil infrastructure in the Middle East has been set up in Saudi
Arabia.
Yeah, to
be centralized.
Yeah.
I found that really interesting to go on to. You go on a Google Earth and you can go and have a look now I'm going to try and say it. Is it Abaqiq or something?
I have no idea.
I don't know either. But anyway, the Saudi Aramco facility, the main facility they have, is it's very centralized. You know, they have a few different little facilities dotted around, but the main one, the one that they attacked, is massive. And it's just right there. You can just look on.
Let's just leave all this shit right here.
Google.
What could possibly happen? What could go wrong?
Yeah. So with Google Maps, some drones, you can really seriously make a dint and the US has always kind of felt that it's, you know, with its massive military capacity, it didn't need to be worried about like pushing countries to any sort of limit. There was no real limit because, you know, we've just got a much larger army than you and a lot more technology. This has kind of like put the moz on that a bit.
Right. Yeah. I mean, what happened? If this is happening just with this undeclared slow motion squeezing war conflict thing that they've got going on with Iran and or Yemen, depending on who was involved in this. But if this is what's happening just in this limited, squeezing, economic...
Python-like.
Conflict, what happens if they declare open war?
Right. Within a few weeks, they could totally take out the whole of Saudi's oil capacity.
Everyone around, yeah. They could do some serious damage, because it turns out that's just something you can do now.
Right. Like
drone warfare and drone technology. They come up with a bunch of ideas for how to blow shit up. And instead of directing it at, you know, military facilities, they can just direct it at energy infrastructure.
Right. Or corporate infrastructure. Like, there's a whole lot of things. Like, if you're not concentrating in the old-fashioned kind of arena of war, theater of war, they say, then. So I think this is might have blown the minds of the U.S. to the point where we may even look back at this point in time and go, ah, well, that was where the kind of the bluff came apart. We'll see. I mean, there is a possibility that they could nuke him tomorrow.
Always that possibility, because we live in a world where we have decided that that's a good idea to just keep weapons around that could end the world
right
at any moment.
Well, Bolton's replacement has come in, so and apparently they're calling him Bolton Light.
The American conservative coined that. This is a Bolton Light.
Robert O'Brien, his name is.
Yeah. We don't know a whole lot about him other than he's like a Romney guy, kind of same American supremacist, sort of neoconservative ideology where the U.S. should dominate the world at all costs, but probably hasn't threatened anyone's kids in order to start a war.
Yeah. So that's the light bit.
Yeah. No, you know things are going kind of bad when you hear Bolton Light and you're like, oh, thank fuck.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's so much better.
Yeah. Yeah. But these are the type of people who say that a nuclear war is winnable. I know that Bolton's, you know, the intermediary, so Bolton was fired, and then the intermediary guy who was the deputy guy, the advisor to Bolton, he, in the 80s, like at the peak of kind of, you know, everyone was sick of the Cold War in the 80s. Even I remember that as a kid. And he was saying that, yeah, we can win a nuclear war, no worries. Like that, we'll just lose 20 million people, he said. Just 20 million. He thought that was pretty good.
That is a line from Dr. Strangelove. Like, I think that's like a verbatim line.
Right, yeah.
I would have to double check it, but I'm pretty sure that's very similar to that war room scene.
Yeah, well, this is a psychopathic sort of like thinking that, you know, the classical, he said we could win in a classical sense and that it's just a matter of physics. Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah, it is. Winning a nuclear war is definitely a question of physics. Like, how do you hold all those human atoms together after they have been hit by a nuclear bomb?
Creepy, creepy, creepy fucks.
They're so gross. But yeah, they're nobody really gives a shit. They're no ordinary people. It's they have been pushing.
You mean about this?
The Iran.
Iran and the Saudi oil bombing.
Right, yeah.
No, they don't. Well, why would they? No one died. You know, it's only rich people who took a hit.
Right. It shows how badly they can attack energy infrastructure and cause rich people a great deal of inconvenience.
Yeah.
And causing rich people convenience is the whole reason wars happen in the first place, pretty much.
Right.
But also, like, they have been selling this Iran war ever since they pulled out of the Iran deal. They've been trying to manufacture consent for it while saying, we don't want war, we don't want war. But also, those guys need to go. But we don't want war, but we don't want war, but these guys. They've been talking out of both sides of their mouth for a long time in order to get people fearful of this nation on the other side of the planet that doesn't actually pose any threat to them. They're a regional power. And it has not worked. It's consistently failing. It's consistently falling apart.
Yeah.
And all they've got to offer is, well, what about our oil? What about our black slime? What about they broke our toy plane? You guys, we need to go to war. They broke our toy plane.
Well, Pompeo is saying, you know, it's an attack on America, which was literally a couple of months ago a headline in The Onion.
Right. They had John Bolton saying it. Yeah. Saying an attack on oil tankers is an attack on all Americans. Now Pompeo is just saying it. The turnover rate for Onion article to normal news article is getting smaller and smaller.
Yeah.
And it's not even a parody anymore. It's just the thing that is happening.
Right. And it feels desperate to me. It feels like desperation.
Right. Yeah. Well, so Iran is, they're the main non-absorbed government in the region, in the Middle East.
They're not in the blob yet.
Yeah, there's this imperial blob. It's just like the movie The Blob, where it's always trying to absorb.
We're very scientific in our analysis, like mainly movies.
Right. Yeah. No, it sucks. The goal is to just suck people up, because if the imperial blob can absorb a nation into its fold, then it gets that much stronger. It gets that much bigger. It has that much more allies. That much more geopolitical, geostrategic dominance. And they've been pushing at Iran this whole time, but Iran is pretty wealthy. They've got a lot of natural resources at their disposal, and they've got a really strong sense of themselves. That's
they do seem to, and even
it's an ancient culture.
Yes,
the Persians. So they're like,
they don't seem to be able to wedge either politically. Hmm. There doesn't seem to be too many fault lines inside these Iranian political structure. So they haven't been able to kind of soft coup them as either.
There's, right.
They've been extremely loyal to each other.
Yeah, and they get more loyal the more aggressively the Americans push on them.
Right. So this is they've just had a lot of difficulty with that. And as a geostrategic location, it's vital, really, to the Middle East and the way the Middle East functions.
So, it's the crown jewels. They want to get that so bad. So bad.
They're digging it so bad.
Lindsey Graham, when he's on camera now, he's just like drooling. He has to wipe drool away from his teeth. This is it. You guys, we're going to get him, right? We're going to get him. We're going to go in there and get him, right?
He's hiding his erection.
But you can basically understand all U.S. foreign policy and all of the foreign policy of its allies pretty much, almost, just by understanding that this whole thing is just an empire trying to absorb more and more bodies into its fold.
Yeah, and I think what that's come out into the open, I think, this week, more and more, hasn't it? Marco Rubio is threatening the Solomon Islands.
Right. They shifted from their alliance from Taiwan to China. And as a result, Rubio's acting like it's a secession. Secession,
yeah. It's like Texas leaving or something. You know, he's all like, yeah, well,
we're going to hammer your economy. We're going to cut you off from the dollar.
Yeah.
It says so much, because as an American, what I learned in school was that there are all these different countries and they're in charge of their own governments, and we each do our thing, and America is a country and it's just a normal country and it does its own thing, and then England's over there and China's over there and they do their own things. But when you actually look at what's going on, it gets treated by the people who are actually running things as a single nation or as a single empire.
Right. Yeah, and they're loyal to each other in the same way. They're loyal to money in each other, into their, you know, usually just business interests as well. Like it's not particularly, it's not national at all.
No, it's basically they figured out that they can make a lot more power and control a lot more human beings if they're all moving in the same direction.
Right.
And the only time they run into a speed bump is in something like Iran, where they're like, hey, come on, come and run with us. We're all running this way. We're all going to start bulldozing this way. And Iran is kind of just like, nah, we'd rather just kind of do our own thing, because then if we join you, we won't be in charge anymore. And we kind of like being in charge. We like doing our own thing. And then we get wars and conflicts and stuff, because it's disobedience. That's all U.S. foreign policy basically is. It's rewarding the obedient and smashing the disobedient.
Carrots and sticks.
Yeah, that's how they do things. They use the carrot of military alliance and economic alliance and the stick of economic and military warfare in order to extract compliance.
Mm. And so with the Solomon Islands, you know, moving from Taipei to Beijing, I've also noticed in Australia too, there's been, you know, we're such a loyal lackey to the US empire. Yeah. But there has been some dissent even this week, because there's been at least a sense in Australia that we try and straddle between, you know, because China is of a great economic importance to us. They're trying to kind of manage that as well.
Right. And there was a lot of talk about that. Former Prime Minister Kevin Rudd, right? He was all about the pivot to China.
Right.
Which would have drawn a much bigger reaction, I think, but of the same sort as we're seeing with the U.S. government and the Solomon Islands today.
Yeah. It's like, you know, it's like the guy that you're going out with and he doesn't seem to give a shit about you until you say, oh, I think it's over. And then he throws a shit fit.
Right, yeah. At this point, I think a lot of the absorbed governments within the empire kind of just stay in compliance as much to avoid pissing off America.
Right.
As they just don't want to piss them off. It's not necessarily even that they're getting a whole lot out of it.
Yeah, well, like the U.S. economy is, it's kind of a shell of an economy. It's like it's more made of narrative than it is made of actual trade. Whereas the Chinese economy, like, is, you know, they're basically the factory of the world. They're the manufacturing center of the world. They put their billion people to work and they make things that go everywhere. Whereas the U.S. economy has been kind of backed by the butt of a gun more than anything.
Yeah, it's a little bit like everyone's standing in a bar and one guy has a handful of paper in one hand and a gun in the other.
Yeah.
And he's basically just pointing the gun all around the room and saying, you have to treat this paper like it's worth a lot of money so I can buy me some drinks. And everyone's just kind of like, all right, man. All right. Yeah. But this is a really tense situation and anything could go wrong. There could be an earthquake or something. He could point his gun away from the wrong person. And then, you know, the dude in the Russian fur hat might tackle him or whatever.
Yeah.
That is
the petrodollar,
isn't it? It's a very tenuous setup that they got going on. Yeah. Yeah. It's entire narrative.
It's bluff.
Yeah. And everyone just is expected to treat it like it's a certain thing. And if they don't, then they'll get attacked.
Right. I mean, money in and of itself is a story. So it's, you know, to say that some money is more real than other money is not like you're getting into some pretty philosophical territory there.
Right. But there's a difference between money that's backed by, you know, things like natural resources or
labor. Yeah.
Right. Or, yeah. Or even raw military power. If it was just raw military power, that's a backing. Technically an actual, real, tangible thing. But with the U.S., it's really, when you get right down to it, it's just narrative.
Right.
And the cool thing about it just being narrative is that people can change the story if they want.
That's what we would like to happen, isn't it?
Trying to change the story. See if we can get things mixed up a little bit.
Right. I think we've kind of finished on that. Do you want to do a question?
Well, I wanted to talk a little bit about how, so the U.S. is saying it's Iran.
Mm.
And we're all just expected to believe that without any evidence, which is the stupidest thing anyone can possibly do in a post-Iraq invasion world.
Well, they've done that thing. I love this. This is my favorite American trick, is that they show a satellite photo and then they say, there's the evidence. And, like, they hope that you just feel like like you don't want to sound dumb and don't want to ask questions. Like, well, what? Why is that evidence? I'm sorry. Like, what am I looking at here? Like, don't ask questions. There's the evidence. If you don't understand it, you're stupid.
Yeah. Well, if you look at it, there's nothing in there that actually proves that it was Iran. But like, they'll try to shift the burden of proof, won't they? Like Pompeo will say, there's no proof that this was the Houthis.
Yeah. Because there's no proof that it wasn't.
No, if you are trying to manufacture consent for military aggressions, then it is your job to prove to us your positive narrative.
Right.
That's the burden of proof is on you. Ever since Iraq, the burden of proof is necessarily much higher than it would otherwise have been. And they haven't come anywhere close to what would be acceptable in a pre-Iraq invasion world, let alone a post-Iraq invasion world.
Right.
But even if it was Iran, this is the point I wanted to make. Even if it was Iran, so what? That's so big fucking deal. It would still be America's fault. All this would be Iran acting as a result of being cornered economically. And a lot of people think that this is what it was. Is the result of Iran being backed into a corner economically with crushing U.S. sanctions and attacking America's, the empire's, imperial interests in Saudi Arabia in retaliation for that.
And attacking them very effectively.
Right.
See, and I think that's why there's disagreement. Like, there have been a lot of people rushing in, the chiefs of staff especially, but like... saying, hey, let's just hold up a second. Let's not rush to conclusions. Let's find out the evidence, etc. Which is very, I find that very well-mannered for the American government.
Mm.
So there's something going on there. And I think it's because they've realized that, I think if it was them, then they've shown themselves up to be... something that you don't mess with.
Right, yeah. They could, like we were talking about, they could take out the whole energy infrastructure. But yeah, it would just be, you know, sanctions are war. Right. Economic sanctions are an act of war. If any country were doing to America what America is doing to Iran, it would be full-scale hot war that day.
Right,
immediately. Yeah. And there would be no question about it.
Yeah.
That would never be tolerated. And Iran is being subject to those acts of economic war. So if they are retaliating in this way, then that's just them responding to U.S. aggressions. Iran was in full compliance with the Iran deal, with the nuclear deal. It was ticking along fine, and it was America that pulled out. At Israeli urging and a few, you know, Saudi urging as well. But it was America that pulled the trigger. It was America that started this. So you can't expect to just squeeze someone and squeeze someone and squeeze someone and squeeze someone and not feel a little squeezed back yourself.
Yeah.
That's just normal. And I think it's important to emphasize in this narrative matrix that we're in, to avoid confusion, that even if it was the Iranians, big deal. America should still end the sanctions and get the hell out of the way and mind its own fucking side of the planet, for God's sakes. Yeah.
So far away. So far away.
Very, very far away.
Yeah. So, yeah. Anyway. You know what? I was... Just the Republicans. They're so funny. They're so... I just find them so crazy. Like, so they've been all over the news with all of this, you know, Iran stuff. I just find it really fucking weird that there is a party. There's only two parties in the US anyway. There's only two parties. And one of those parties tries to sell itself. I mean, successfully tries to sell itself. People vote for them on saying, we will take away your benefits and we will go to war. like no free stuff and more war. And people vote for them.
They win
That's
elections.
Their whole platform. Like, we're going to take away all... You pay us taxes. Yeah, no problem. But we are going to... You will not get anything back from them. And we will use them...
funnel that right into killing strangers on the other side of the world.
Yeah, into just sending your youngest and brightest over to the other side of the world to kill other people.
Also, we'll let rich people dump poison into the ocean.
Oh, yeah, we like that too.
That's important.
Yeah, that's a seller. You know, that's a real vote winner.
That's pretty much the vote platform.
I don't understand.
Well, it's just how bad are the Democrats that they can't beat that?
Oh, well, all they've got is, look, you know, we won't do that. Okay, that's a lie. We probably will do that, but we will say that we won't.
We'll at least have the decency to lie to you.
Yeah.
We promise we'll lie to you.
But at the end of the day, in the fullness of time, we'll probably have to get around to doing that exact thing as well. But, you know, look, we'll use all the correct pronouns at the same time.
You'll feel very good about yourself when you do it. We promise.
Yeah, yeah.
When we invade Iraq, it will be for women's rights.
Yes. And, you know,
end tyranny, you'll be anti-imperialist.
Fascism, yeah, yeah.
That whole pro-NATO wing of the far left, the weird,
yeah,
I'm so
funny.
Far left that I'm a centrist people, but they will love it.
Yeah, they're very, very strange. And then they say, all right, so then you go, well, surely there's a third party. Oh, no. No, absolutely.
Are you Russian?
Not allowed a third party, Susan.
You're not even allowed to act like there's a third party.
You're not allowed to mention third parties. Like, you know, it's... I find the whole thing so fucking weird. So, yes. It's a success. It's a mad success. Regular people think, yeah, I really don't want benefits and I do want more war. Where do I sign up for that?
That's how effective the propaganda machine is. That's what we're up against.
Right. It totally twists... Like, this is the way that narrative can totally twist your story so that you are actually hurting yourself. You're sabotaging yourself all the time for good feelings and you know,
just
loyalties.
Avoiding cognitive dissonance.
Right,
basically.
Yeah.
A lot of it boils down to what's cognitively comfortable. We select for cognitive ease, and believing that our clique is in the right is often enough to get us to believe the stupidest fucking shit. Yeah. In the face of overwhelming evidence to the contrary.
Yeah. All right, let's go to a question, do you reckon?
Yeah.
Okay, this is from Danny on email.
Hey, Danny.
Hey, Danny. Danny has some awesome ideas as well. So thank you for them too, Danny. He said, you speak a lot about changing the way our minds operate in order to combat the narratives we're constantly pummeled with. How specifically do you think a healthy human brain works in your ideal future? That's really deep.
Yeah.
So, all right, you go first.
Okay.
How specifically do you think a healthy human brain works in your ideal future?
I don't know. Much about neurology, but I know a healthy human mind would work in a way that doesn't invest belief in concepts. That's basically it. It's in narrative. There is not an energetic power of belief that gets wrapped up in stories. We evolved these massive brains for the purpose of out-surviving and out-thriving other competing organisms. That's what they're for. They're not for answering life's big questions or figuring out what I really am inside, what am I meant to be doing with my life or whatever. They're not really meant for thinking about. They're great for figuring out how to, you know, cure an infection or... They happen to be really useful for figuring out how to kill large numbers of people. They're great for that. But...
What do you mean cure an infection?
Oh, like, minds are good at that. Minds are really good for figuring out how, like, medicines and stuff. inventing things.
Oh, I think, well, I don't even think that they're good at that. I think they're good at narrating 6 seconds after your actual, you know, deeper consciousness that doesn't have a narrator. After that has come up with the idea, it goes, oh, me, that was me. I thought of that really cool idea.
Yeah, inspiration plays a huge role in that as well. That's true.
Yeah.
But I think what a healthy mind does, and a mind that is difficult to propagandize, actually uses thoughts like they're just tools. And that is possible. It's totally possible to set yourself cognitively in a place where you're not energetically investing belief in how it is stories. And you can pick up a story and you can use it to the extent that it is useful, or for fun. Storytelling is fun. Language is fun. You can play around with it and you can play around with ideas and use them to whatever extent they're useful. And then when they're done, you set them aside. You don't identify with them.
You're right. You kind of experiment with them.
Hmm.
Like you put an idea in place, and is it useful? Is it helpful? Is it going to help, you know, the whole? And if it doesn't, if it's hurting you, then you can put it aside and let it go. So you come up with more healthy stories about, because I think mainly what we run on are programs and patterns that we have put in place since we were children. And we put them in place generally in times of trauma. So something happens in our world, we think, oh, shit, I don't want that to happen again. So your little five-year-old brain decides on a way that it's going to avoid that happening, avoid embarrassment, or, you know, avoid getting hurt, or avoid getting in trouble, all those sorts of things. And then it uses that little program, every time that gets triggered, every time you're in a situation which is similar to that, you go back into that program, and then you try and avert being hurt again by using this one simple program that you decided on when you were five. And that, you know, over time has lots of different difficulties. You know, you'll end up making the same bad decisions over and over again until you put it all out in front of you, going, well, what is actually useful here? Like, the question, who am I and what am I doing here, or whatever your thinking brain can't come up with. But if you're looking around you and thinking, well, what am I not, is a really good question to ask yourself in meditation.
Yeah, and that comes into propaganda by, so if you're able to see thoughts as objects instead of as what you are, instead of or real things, if you're able to just see a mental story and look at it as an object and go, oh, that's pretty, then when propaganda comes in, the only thing, if you're really conscious, like what you were talking about, the old coping strategies, the problem is not the coping strategies. They worked fine. The problem is that they become unconscious.
Right.
And you forget that they're there. And then you start trying to deal with your 30, 40, 50-year-old life with a coping strategy that you invented when you were 18 months old to avoid a spasm response out of fear.
Right.
And then forgot about and kind of set on autopilot, and it became unconscious. If you have a conscious relationship with story, then when a propaganda narrative comes in, you can just look at it and you can go, is this useful to me? And the answer will
always be no.
No, and it's actually kind of funny and weird and gross.
And yeah, and has this really weird manipulative kind of...
Yeah, you can see it. You can see the propaganda.
See it trying, grabbing at you, like, you know, come on, do the thing. Do the thing for me. Be a thing for me.
It just looks really weird. It's trying to pull your strings and it's just reaching in, and it's... I don't know. In its own way, it's kind of cute.
Yeah.
Because it sincerely is geared at hooking in, and you can kind of see it. And,
yeah.
No, thank you. And then from there, you can start getting a clear picture of what's actually going on. You can start looking at life minus narrative. And that's a very, very different place than life plus narrative.
Right.
Life filtered through thought is night and day different from life not filtered through narrative, when things are just still and You don't have this churning, babbling monologue that you believe is true, and you're looking at life, you're looking at stuff from the outside. It's a completely different world.
Well, it's like having a screen on all the time in front of you, isn't it? It's like looking at your phone all day, every day, when you're totally fixated on your thoughts. So when that's gone, things just get to be as they are. And of course, the screen will turn back on. You know, it's an ongoing process. It's not really,
and it's still never there. You might need it. There's stuff you need it for.
Right.
You need your phone sometimes.
Yeah, true. Yeah. But yeah, so, and then, you know, while you're looking at the world through this kind of much more natural way, like without the kind of screen of mental narrative crossing it, you may look into the eyes of someone else who is also looking as well, and have a real connection with them, a real conversation. And I think that's when things are really change, when we start having relationships with each other that where there's an earnest, sincere desire to be as truthful as possible with each other and to be as free of manipulation with each other as possible, and as humble as we can be when it does come up, which, of course, you know, it does. You know, the more you fall in love with someone, the more you get scared. And that will bring up things. But yeah, I think that once we start having really collaborative, truthful relationships with each other, I think that's going to change everything, because then you can co-create. You know, two brains are always better than one. Three brains are going to be exponentially better. I think that's when real miracles happen. And we can really start making beautiful things that, that, you know, what's that Bucky Fuller quote about, like, you don't
change an existing paradigm by forcing a change. You change it by creating a new model.
Yeah.
That is more appealing, or something like that.
Something like that. We need to create a new model.
Mm.
I think that will happen naturally.
Well, we're also, it's almost like the way the propagandists are getting more and more ham-fisted, it's almost like they're shoving us towards it at this point.
Well, I always felt that kind of, like, especially when I really started to wake up to this thing, it was like, wow, you can see how I'm looking at you, and you can see that I can see exactly what you're doing, but you keep doing it. I just couldn't believe that they kept doing it. But of course you're going to keep doing it. When that's your only tool, you've got to keep using the tool. So,
yeah, manipulators are the cool thing about them is they're so predictable. They're like computer programs.
Yes.
They just do the same thing over and over again. And the reason they are able to manipulate is because they think everyone else is a computer program. And they set up these manipulation strategies, which are built around our fear habits and stuff that we tend to have in common, and our cognitive biases, the little glitches in our system. And they use those to steer us in the directions they want. But as soon as we are no longer computer programs, as soon as we are able to kind of program ourselves and look at our wiring, make our unconscious mental habits conscious, and look at mental narratives and decide if they are useful to us or not, we're no longer playing that game anymore.
Yeah. And then, but they'll keep trying to run the program, because what else are they going to do? Like, that's literally, they think it's going to work, and they just keep pressing that button, seeing if it'll work again. So it will get more and more ham-fisted. It will get more and more obvious to more and more people. That's just going to happen. So,
And they're very trustworthy in that way, aren't they?
Like, yeah.
We talk about all the time how untrustworthy the propagandists and manipulators are, but you can definitely
trust them. But you can rely on them
to keep doing the thing that they are doing.
Yeah.
In the same way. You know, they don't even come up with original coup strategies anymore. Like, you guys just did this in 2014 with Ukraine. Why are you doing this again here? Same shit over and over again. It's just a recycled script. Roll out that program.
Yeah. And, you know, because it used to work, it'll work again, surely. And it's not going to work. At some point, it's not going to work. And I think we're seeing that happening.
Well, they're just, even like with this Iran thing, the fact that some, they,
the what
the, survive, the Iran thing.
Right.
The fact that they need so desperately, the, I mean, the Empire does need to take out its rivals fairly soon before, especially China, surpasses it.
Yeah.
And all its allies and stuff, but they need to kind of hurry up and do it. So they're in a rush. They're getting really more and more ham-fisted and less skillful and more urgent and more hurried. And that's their strength normally, is that they don't have to hurry because they're so powerful. They're like, we can just sanction you for 5 years. It's no big deal. We're in no rush.
Right.
But they are in a rush now. They're in a rush to stop China and its allies in their tracks, the unabsorbed governments. And the fact that they need it so bad, and yet nobody wants it,
yeah,
is kind of this brick wall that we're that they're hurtling towards,
right?
That they're just gonna have to crash into at some point because their needs and our just the way we're wired, the way we're set up, are necessarily in conflict,
right?
And the harder they push us, and they will necessarily keep pushing us, it's the only thing they know how to do, the harder they push us, the more people, they're just going to wake up going, ow, why are you doing? Why are you doing that? Ow, why are you doing that? Oh, now I see why you're doing that.
Right. Yeah, because they've had this humanitarian overlay over every story that this is all for the common good and, you know, we're doing this for freedom and democracy, etc. When you're in a hurry, you know, sometimes you have to just come out and shove and push, like, and just make that thing happen. Forget about freedom and democracy for a second. We'll just try and cover it over. Like, we'll just try. And they have done that. Like, and they successfully do things like that. I find that really fascinating. Like, they successfully covered the DNC rigging.
Mm. With copious amounts of distraction.
Right. So, you know, a huge, huge event. Russiagate was massive. Like, it was such a circus.
Biggest psyop ever, probably.
Probably, yeah. Mm. So, yeah, that question was never answered. Does the DNC rig? Yes, that was answered. But, like, you know, did they do anything to change that? No, they did not.
And they're continuing to do it.
Right.
They're keeping Tulsi out.
Right. Just out there in the open. But there's only so many things they can do that with. You know, that only affects people who really, you know, are a segment of the progressive people, you know, that they're the only ones who really took notice of that. But that, like, as they kind of get into these larger arenas, then it's going to be much more difficult to develop Russiagates and big distractions and also people are getting tired of the distractions. Like, they're not having the same emotional limbic force that they used to have.
Well, yeah, I mean, before Russiagate collapsed into its own footprint, there was a lot of people were talking about that. Just, enough, Rachel, come on. Rachel, enough. This hurts.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think to answer the question, a healthy human brain works in the future, I think probably like yours does. I think people will just be a lot more aware of of the actions that are happening in the real world as opposed to the narrative that is being attempted to overlay them. So watching what people are actually doing, you know, with their resources and then listening to their stories and where the disparity is, you'll see who they truly are. So people with integrity, their actions and their stories are the same thing. People with no integrity will say something and do the other. I think that'll just become more and more obvious over time. Okay, well, I think that's good.
I think so too.
You've been on Going Rogue. Thank you so much for listening. I'm a fully crowdfunded writer, so Any shares, likes, etc. are fantastic. Don't forget to subscribe. That really helps me. If you'd like to throw some money in my hat, I've got a Patreon, links in the description, PayPal, even Bitcoin. And yeah, thanks so much for joining us. Leave any questions underneath. We read everything, and we've really enjoyed reading everything. So yeah, the more conversation, the better. Any thoughts you have, just throw them in there. It's really great. You've been on Going Rogue. Thanks. And I'm Caitlin Johnston, and you're Tim Foley.
We haven't figured out the logout thing yet. Sorry.
Shine on, beautifuls.